So tell me, doctor, what is low T and how does it affect your health?
So low T, there's a lot of, I think, confusion about it. Low T basically is abbreviated for low testosterone, testosterone being the principal androgenic or male-oriented hormone. Low T is associated with a lot of different things. Androgen deficient men or testosterone deficient men are infertile because the testosterone is intimately associated with production of sperm and thus fertility. But
let's stop right there and let's talk about the difference between androgenic and anabolic. You know, I get guys that pick up the phone and they're calling me in my practice and they're saying, Eve, what do you think about taking anabolic steroids? You know, anabolic steroids are supposed to bulk you up.
Well, in essence, they do. But there's really only one anabolic steroid that is at this point used clinically in men, and that's testosterone. There are others, and androstenedione being one, that is available and has been used by some, but essentially it's very interesting. In men, feeding upstream in the hormone cascade doesn't really seem to do much in making more of the hormone, but that's a different subject.
What does that mean in English, feeding upstream?
Basically, the hormone cascade is the steroid hormones, all of the steroid hormones, sex hormones and stress hormones like cortisol, come from cholesterol. Cholesterol is changed in the body by enzymes into a bunch of different secondary metabolites, essentially. As cholesterol changes, it changes into steroid hormones. The first one is pregnenolone, and then we get progesterone and DHEA, or dihydroepiandrosterone.
That's easy for you to say.
And then from DHEA, we can get estrone, one of the estrogens. We can get cortisol, and we can get androstenedione. From progesterone, we get androstenedione. And androstenedione is the first of the real androgenic hormones that goes down into testosterone.
Well, let's back up. Since we know now that all hormones are built on cholesterol,
yes,
it would be like saying that cholesterol is the brick and we don't know whether we're building a garage or a house or a high rise. We still have to have that brick in order to convert and change the molecule in order to make a hormone, any hormone.
Exactly.
So if we need cholesterol in order to make all of our hormones, what happens to people that are on cholesterol-lowering medications?
Well, there's some really very good evidence out there that all of the powerful cholesterol-lowering medicines, and I was reading one study yesterday about simvastatin, Zocor, that it actually does reduce the production of sex steroid hormones. So
when you reduce that
cholesterol, you don't have the brick to make the building.
Well, you know, I get clients in my practice and I tell them 160 is my bottom line, that I never want them to get their cholesterol below 160.
Right.
And some of the cardiologists are pretty aggressive in terms of trying to drive cholesterol down into the basement as if, in fact, it was the cause of heart disease.
Right.
And so I see these guys that they drive their cholesterol down, you know, to 130s and, you know, really low numbers like that. And then all of a sudden, they've got muscle wasting. All of a sudden, they've got memory problems. All of a sudden, they've got issues with erectile function. You know, lots of things that testosterone relates to. And not to mention depression. So do you believe that you can lower cholesterol too much?
Absolutely. And that was a really good point, because another study suggests that simvastatin, as it's lowering the testosterone, also disrupts mood and makes people depressed. So low cholesterol is really an important issue, because the brain is mostly fat, as we've talked about on this show numerous times, and you have, and the liver is mostly fat, and all of the cell membranes in the body are made of fat, and cholesterol is an important constituent in the cell membranes. So if you take it away, there's less cell integrity. In other words, the cells are damaged from the get-go. All of the membranes in the mitochondria, that unit inside the cell that processes basically everything that's so important, is all fat. All the membranes are fat. And if you take the cholesterol away, those membranes unravel. And so your processing ability goes down.
So when we lower cholesterol too much, we end up in trouble.
Big trouble.
And for some individuals, lowering cholesterol at all with a medication can create these side symptoms of mood disorder as well as affect the membrane integrity.
Yes.
And ultimately that, affect testosterone.
The reason that is an issue, even in those people that you start the medicine on, is because the reason they have a cholesterol issue in the first place is because the membranes are already stressed. Cholesterol elevation is a symptom of toxic stress in the body of some sort, whether it's insulin dysregulation and sugar problems or other toxins. There's something causing the cholesterol to go up. And it's not cholesterol that is the problem. That is a symptom of the problem. So if we treat the symptom, we can actually perpetuate and actually propagate more of the problem because these drugs cause more stress.
Well, yeah, I just had a client in my practice last week, and her cholesterol had gone up 40 points over a year. And, you know, she was coming in 190s and 195s and 198s and 202s and like that for years. She's been my client. And all of a sudden she comes in with a 238.
So what was her toxic exposure?
And so her doctor said, oh, you got to go on statin drugs right away. You got to go on statin drugs. And when I explained to her that 50% of people that go into hospital with a heart attack have cholesterol under 200. So if cholesterol was the culprit, then we wouldn't be seeing people with heart attacks with cholesterol under 200.
Right.
And I suggested to her that there might be a problem with her thyroid. She had had a TSH test, a thyroid stimulating hormone test, and the number was 3 point something. I think it was 3.2. And her doctor said, well, that's fine. It's in the range. And I explained to her that anytime we see TSH go above 2, it essentially tells us that the thyroid is, I call it, drifting south, just mm-hmm. not functioning very well. And suggested that she get a full thyroid panel, explore not only TSH, but the actual levels of hormone, thyroid hormone, T4 and T3. And sure enough, her levels were depressed. We put her on a supplement to help to get that thyroid to work better because she was in a zone that she didn't really require a medication. She just needed some support for that thyroid. And the second the thyroid normalized, the cholesterol went back down to 205.
Fix the metabolism, fix the problem.
Right, right. But she said, you know, how come other people don't know this? How come doctors don't know that you can have high cholesterol from something other than a cardiac issue, that, you know, high cholesterol can come as a result of low hormones? And I said, well, you know, we're trying to get the word out. You got to actually read the literature.
Yeah, that does help. there is a problem, though, and I have to some extent, forgive my former colleagues in the practice of conventional medicine, in that they're trained in a system that really looks at human illness. It doesn't look at human health and wellness really well at all. And so it's this reductionistic look at, okay, here's a cholesterol problem. We need to solve the cholesterol problem rather than looking at the whole picture of the human beingness. And so they've been trained in a system that simply addresses that problem rather than addressing the human being around the problem.
Right. A pill for every ill.
Right.
Well, and that's, you know, what holistic means. It means we're looking at the whole person, the entire effect.
Right.
So could the same thing happen? Could somebody have driven down their cholesterol and as a result created low testosterone?
Without a doubt. That's proven.
So where are we going to go from there?
Well, maybe we should think about how many people actually may have it. There are possibly 13 million men in America alone that have low testosterone or the symptoms thereof.
Well, let's talk about what those symptoms are.
Well, let's start with the one that drives most men to see the doctor about in the first place, erectile dysfunction.
Uh-huh.
That is a symptom of testicular failure or secondary hypogonadism, which is low testosterone not associated with the testes themselves, but from other problems in the body. But erectile dysfunction is not just a low testosterone issue, which is why many men don't achieve a fix from their erectile dysfunction just by getting on testosterone, because the metabolism itself and other things are involved that may be preventing adequate ability to get the erection. And those can be actually things that would interfere with vascular function, smoking and stress and other issues. But other symptoms are decreased sex drive, decreased libido, lack of energy, lack of strength, body muscle mass wasting and increased body fat, central obesity, poor mood, grumpiness. Let's see.
So grumpy old man is a real thing.
Grumpy old man is a real thing, and it could be actually a metabolic problem that we can actually fix.
Well, and when we look at depression in men that are aging, we absolutely see a much higher rate of depression in males as they age than we see in females as they age. And the nature of that lifting of mood is not something that people think about with testosterone. They strictly think about the sexual function. But, you know, I still get individuals that come into my practice and their doctor has checked their testosterone and their testosterone is in, you know, normal range. You know, if you look at 250 to 900 on a test and, you know, they come in at 400, they go, oh, well, that's a, you know, that's in range. That's a pretty good number.
Right.
And yet they have erectile problems, and I have to bring it to their attention that this has to do with blood flow.
Right.
It has to do with the health of their arteries. It has to do with their potential for diabetes. It doesn't just have to do with testosterone.
Exactly. So there are a couple ways that or actually several causes or maybe definitions I should talk about. Primary hypogonadism or primary testicular failure essentially is one way of getting it. The testes just either stop producing or stop responding to signaling from the other organs, and so you don't actually make the testosterone. You've lost some production ability. There's interference with that. And on the other hand, secondary hypogonadism comes from the pituitary and the hypothalamus, master gland in the brain that actually orchestrates the working of all the other glands, including the testes, the adrenals, the thyroid. And this can be damaged by a lot of different things. Obstructive sleep apnea can disrupt the hypothalamic pituitary axis and disrupt the ability to signal to the testes to make testosterone.
But
toxins
you see,
can do it too.
You know, one of the things that I see with my clients is when I talk about sleep apnea, they say, oh, I don't have apnea, I just snore.
Right.
And I try to remind them that anybody who's snoring, who's laying on their back, has some obstruction going on in terms of their windpipe.
They're, without a doubt.
They're just not getting the air through there correctly. And, you know, my first question is, do you snore on your side? And the answer is always no. I
right.
can't find people who can't even can snore on their side.
Yes.
And so, you know, we had relief with a client here recently when we asked him to sew a pocket in the back of his pajamas and put a tennis ball in it so that every time he rolled over on his back, it woke him up enough that he rolled back over on his side. And, you know, he said had the best night's sleep that he'd had. He thought that it would be the most disturbing night's sleep that he'd ever had. You know, it wouldn't make me very happy rolling over on a tennis ball.
Right.
But the thing is, it solved the problem. So when we look at sleep apnea, we have to remember it doesn't have to be extreme. Somebody doesn't have to be gasping for breath in the middle of the night. If you or your partner are sawing logs, you know, you're snoring, you can wake somebody up in the next room, then you need to be investigated for apnea because apnea can reduce your production of testosterone.
It will disrupt all the hormones. It's a very stressful problem. It'll induce diabetes and cause major problems.
Well, the thing is, it increases the risk of stroke.
Yes.
And so for that reason alone, we should be doing something about snoring. It's just not benign. There's nothing cute about it, even if the puppy is doing it.
Right.
No doubt about it. So you talk about a lot of different things that testosterone can cause, that it can cause problems with libido, with erectile function, with bone mass, with muscle mass, with depression. I mean, is it sounding like the miracle drug that they tried to purport estrogen to be back at the end of the 1950s.
Yeah, it does sound that way. The thing is that this only applies to men. Testosterone doesn't have the same effect in women, but it is critical for all human function. It's just that in the range of low T, men seem to be affected by the deficit much more than women.
Well, you know, when you know that arena called anti-aging medicine, I always thought that was kind of an oxymoron.
I think so too.
You know, it's kind of like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence. When we look at, you know, just the nature of the way that the body works, these anti-aging doctors were commonly trying to take 60 and 70 and 80-year-old men and give them testosterone levels of an 18 or a 25-year-old. And, you know, I happen to be one of the people that believe that Mother Nature designed hormones to start to decline with age as part of the way that the body ages normally.
Yes, I agree with that to some extent, in that I think, you know, you could expect maybe a 1% drop in your testosterone level annually, but not large drops that would put you into deficiency range. Yes, production does go down because, frankly, when you're 90, reproduction is not really high on the agenda of the human species. So, yes, it is acceptable to see it go down, and aging actually is a combination of primary and secondary hypogonadism. The testes get tired, just like the ovaries do. They have a pre-programmed obsolescence. The ovaries just stop at one point. Well, the testes don't. They tend to drift until death, but they don't drift completely off. However, during aging, also the hypothalamus and pituitary age as well. The brain ages, so it doesn't signal as efficiently, nor does it respond to the signal of testosterone, because there's a feedback that goes between testosterone and the brain and making testosterone. So both organs get a little less sensitive, and both organs produce a little less of their hormones.
So if a guy comes into you and you run a blood test,
yes,
in order to determine his testosterone level, let's say it's a 60-year-old male and his testosterone is low, are you automatically going to give him testosterone?
Absolutely not.
What will you do first?
Well, I like to look at Eve and I both go to the Functional Medicine Institute for much of our education, and they've come up with a really interesting algorithm for looking at this low T syndrome and other hormone syndromes. It's called PTSD. We look at production, sensitivity, transport, and detoxification or elimination of the hormones. So I would look at production issues, and to do that I would evaluate blood levels to see actually how much is being made, and then look at things that may interfere with production, because we also subscribe to a way of looking at implementing a treatment program for anybody, and it's called a 5R program, where you remove things that interfere with process, you replace things that are missing, like nutrient deficiencies, and on from there. But so remove. I would remove things like statin drugs. If somebody has low testosterone, one of the first things I would consider is getting rid of the statin drugs, because it affects both production and sensitivity. We've shown that in another study that statins will reduce the amount of LH, FSH receptors in the Leydig cells, which are the cells in the testicles that make the testosterone. So they lose the receptors because of statins, so they can't hear the signal from the pituitary telling them to make the hormone.
Well, and I look right away at the adequacy of protein. You know, as raw food and veganism has increased in popularity, I get men in my practice that have gone on a raw food program or have gone on a vegan program, and they flat out are protein deficient.
Yes.
And the second that we increase the total volume of protein in their diet, their testosterone normalizes.
Well, testosterone is an anabolic hormone, and it builds muscle. So in the absence of protein, the body is going to shut down muscle production because it's going to have to scavenge proteins from other places to build skeletal muscle, like from your bones, for instance. And that's not a good situation. So the body knows to shut down when it's nutrient deficient. So that's part of replace. Replace those proteins and fats. And another remove is to remove sugar, because we know that obesity and metabolic syndrome are directly correlated with a large drop in testosterone levels.
Well, and it's also correlated with a change in the microvascular system, so that the little teeny tiny blood vessels are the first ones that get clogged up.
Exactly.
So we don't have good blood flow.
You get a combination effect there of low testosterone and low blood flow.
So let's talk about who is going to get testosterone. You know, once you've done this and you've made some adaptation in the person's diet and, you know, helped them clean up their act and made sure they don't have apnea and that they're not on statin drugs, and then what?
Well, start to look at the blood levels. I like, there's several ways of looking at hormone levels. Salivary levels have been used. They are highly variable from my perspective in their accuracy in certain hormones, primarily progesterone. Is the worst to actually do salivary levels on. But testosterone can be accurate in the saliva, but because the other ones aren't as accurate, I tend to do all in the blood. It makes it easier for me to assess. So I look at a serum testosterone level, and if that is depressed, I would repeat the serum testosterone level because you're going to have a bad day. And then I would assure that we collect it at a time when it's going to be peak, somewhere between 6 and 10 in the morning is an ideal time to check that level. So that's when we want to see peak testosterone levels in the blood.
So if somebody was out on Saturday night and they were drinking a lot and they got their testosterone checked on Monday morning, it might be suppressed.
That's true. Because the stress of just being out all night would be one thing that could depress it. And then alcohol actually induces a shunt of testosterone to estrogen in the liver. So you would actually be destroying your own testosterone supplies by drinking too much.
When we look at the nature of checking testosterone, are all the blood tests the same?
They are, each lab has its own methodology, and the methodologies are standardized to that lab, so each one has its own range. So a level from one lab might be somewhat different. One of the big labs starts at 250, and another one starts at 280 or something like that, and goes, the one goes to 950, another one to 1100. So there's range variations, but generally it's around the 250 to 1000 range that's considered the quotes normal range, which simply means, again, that a bunch of 20 to 30 year old men walk in the lab, say they have no medical problems, and get their blood drawn, and they draw a bell curve from the results that come out of that.
Understood. Well, you know, as I've learned more about hormones in my practice, I've really learned a lot about the difference between the total amount of hormone and what's called the free hormone or the bioavailable hormone. And so when testosterone is checked, we can check total testosterone or we can test free or unbound testosterone.
Right.
Talk to us about the differences between those two.
Well, the total testosterone is your total reserve. The free testosterone is what's available for these cells to actually take up and utilize at any one time. And because production is rather ongoing, the body likes to actually have that reserve and sequester it. So what it does is it circulates proteins. Sex hormone binding globulin is one of them that will actually hold on to the estrogen and testosterone and keep it out of keep it sequestered out of available use. And then albumin, another blood protein, also holds on to some of the hormones. The bioavailability, or the free testosterone, what's available not bound, circulating in the blood, that level is tightly controlled because the numbers on that are very narrow for its toxicity or ineffectiveness. And so things can affect that, like metabolic syndrome, will directly affect the availability of sex hormone binding globulin and the free testosterone.
Well, I call it handcuffs.
Yes.
You know, when clients come in, I tell them that they've got two kinds of testosterone. They have the all of the testosterone they have in their body, and then they have testosterone in handcuffs. And that's bound testosterone. It's hooked up to a protein, so it can't work.
Right.
And one of the things that we can do is unbind the testosterone. Maybe a guy doesn't actually need more testosterone. He just needs to get the testosterone he has to work better.
That's right. And in order to do that, you can actually intervene with some herbs. Exercise is an amazing thing to do that. 30 minutes of aerobic exercise will free up some of that testosterone. And shifting your diet away from high carbs to higher protein and higher fiber would also help with that.
Well, you know, I use my old favorite oat straw flour.
Yes.
When we go out to Siesta Key, we can see the sea oats. They don't look terribly different from other oats. And the flowers on those sea oats out at Siesta Key are little teeny tiny things. They're not any bigger than the tip of a pencil. But when we take oat straw and oat straw flour, we can make a tea. It's kind of a pappy, bland, nothing tasting tea. And if I give a guy a cup of that tea to take every day, it will allow the testosterone to take the handcuffs off or unbind it. And then his free testosterone levels go up. And as a result, testosterone works better.
So that's what they're talking about when they say sell your oats.
And so there are some products I see advertised on TV that talk about precursors for testosterone, and I'm not sure what they're using because, you know, historically the thing that we learned in nutrition was that zinc was a critical issue. But now, as we understand better balance going on in the body, just throwing a whole lot of zinc at somebody is not really a good idea. Because as soon as you throw a whole lot of zinc at somebody, you imbalance their copper. So you can end up with a catch-22 where you're trying to drive one function and turn around and suppress another function.
Yes.
And so the nature of zinc, yes, zinc is critical for the prostate. It's critical for women and men.
Yes.
It's critical for wound healing. It's critical for cell replication. There's all sorts of things.
It's a cofactor in half the enzymes in the body, probably.
Right.
It's valuable,
yeah.
Super nutrition.
It's like magnesium. It's involved in like 300 different processes. But the thing is that I'll get guys that'll come in that'll think that zinc is a lead in the pencil mineral. And that's a quote from a client. He said, I take zinc because it puts lead in my pencil.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I had
that's
to
warn. That's a good placebo effect.
But I had to warn him that, you know, he was taking 100 milligrams of zinc every day.
Oh,
and I said, you're really going to goof yourself up with taking high amounts of zinc without taking other correlative minerals at the same time. So we do know that zinc is one of the precursors for testosterone.
It's a cofactor.
Yeah.
I'd like to define that. A cofactor is something that facilitates the manufacture. A precursor, to me, is one of those sex steroid hormones that feeds down into the path, like DHEA, progesterone, androstenedione.
Well, in DHEA, we measure in milligrams instead of nanograms, so people have a great deal more DHEA in their body than they have any other kind of hormone.
Yes, it's a huge reservoir hormone.
And so I use DHEA in my practice, and I use DHEA as a way to help men convert into testosterone. There's a little bit of that that can take place, maybe 10%.
You know what's really interesting is the DHEA actually will affect mood and function and improve subjective and functional issues pretty well, but it doesn't raise testosterone generally. But it does seem to actually raise IGF-1. IGF-1 is a growth hormone analog, and it helps with sugar metabolism. So DHEA could actually help with the process of ending the metabolic syndrome.
By coming in the side door.
Coming in the side door and facilitate. Basically, I think what really happens there is that in the metabolic syndrome stresses cortisol so much that cortisol is being utilized so rapidly that you need some help on the stress hormone side, because DHEA can go either way. So you just basically fluff up the body a bit with the DHEA.
So will stress itself lower testosterone?
Absolutely. Stress will disrupt the entire hormone cascade, because you'll shunt away from androgenic hormones to stress hormones, the corticosteroids. And so the body will preferentially make those instead, and you'll sacrifice testosterone production.
Well, I'm still curious about which guys are going to get a testosterone shot and which guys are going to get a testosterone gel.
Before we go there, I want to go back to one thing you said about precursors. And this is one thing that scares me, because I see on the shelf in these bodybuilding stores, the health nutrition stores or sports nutrition stores, testosterone in quotes precursors, end quotes. The only testosterone precursors that are actually testosterone precursors are androstenedione and DHEA and progesterone, the natural human hormones. And so
So they're lying?
Well, it's illegal now for anyone to sell anything but DHEA, and men have found that DHEA doesn't go to testosterone. The bodybuilders already figured this out, and instead it turns to estrogen, and they end up getting large breasts or gynecomastia and no muscle effect. So the things that are on the market now are these bizarre synthetic creations that, frankly, I think evil men have created to fleece unsuspecting and foolish people buying them. They're bizarre steroid analogs that have no relation to human hormones, and we have no idea what they metabolize into, though some may actually turn into something that looks like testosterone and push the system that direction. we don't know what they're doing. And these things are flying off the shelf. It's very frightening because we know that a synthetic human estrogen made from horse urine causes breast cancer in women. Are we causing other cancers in men by having them take these bizarre analogs that are out there only because the real stuff's illegal for health food stores to sell?
Wow.
Don't like that idea.
Well, and that's what makes me suspicious about all the infomercials on television that say, you know, we can make you more like a man, you know, as a result.
Exactly.
And we want to really pay attention to the fact that testosterone doesn't just have to do with sexual function, that it really does have to do with cardiovascular disease, with
Absolutely.
The bone, with muscle building. And so let's spend a few minutes to talk about the cardiovascular events that have happened in young male bodybuilders who have used these anabolic and androgenic steroids, because we know that some people abuse them. It's real easy for us to look at the muscle heads that are on the world wrestling, you know, kinds of sites, and,
yes.
and we see that they are steroid geeks where they've just done too much. And when we look at the effect of those anabolic and androgenic steroids on these young men, we've seen cardiovascular events in young guys that shouldn't be having them.
Yes. The risk, the potential risk of using testosterone replacement in physiologic doses is nil. When you use it at super physiologic doses, as in bodybuilding, you can create all kinds of problems from hepatitis, fatty liver, liver cancer, cardiovascular events, all kinds of bad things can occur. But in normal human physiologic dosing, there's virtually no cardiovascular risk whatsoever. In fact, it's been shown that low testosterone is associated with increased mortality from heart attack and stroke.
Well, what happens when a woman has high testosterone? You know, I'll get these polycystic ovarian syndrome clients, and they will have testosterone nailed to the ceiling, and they will have that heart disease factor called lipoprotein A, an independent risk factor for heart disease, nailed to the ceiling.
Yes.
What can I do for those women that have that high testosterone? They're growing facial hair. They may even be getting a deeper voice.
Yes.
But clearly, when we look at lipoprotein A, they have a cardiovascular risk as a result of the high testosterone.
You do the same thing you do for a man or anyone with metabolic syndrome. Get them off the sugar, get their insulin metabolism turned around, and the testosterone should drop naturally in that woman. And it's funny. The converse happens in the man with metabolic syndrome. His testosterone will come back up. The genetics of the woman with polycystic ovary syndrome are much different than those of the man with the normal physiology.
So does a man produce the same amount of testosterone every day, every day, every day?
It's variable. That's why you want to check the level twice before you actually commit someone to therapy. The standard reductionist Western approach to testosterone is, if it's low, treat it. Start on some sort of testosterone replacement therapy.
So who gets the shot and who gets the gel?
It's preference.
Really?
Truly. Yeah, I think shot and gel both work well. If you want to come to a doctor's office and get a weekly shot or give it yourself, that's quite valid. It's highly effective, and I think actually from the people that I've watched, really they feel the best on that method because you get direct delivery into the system. And weekly is really important because that way you don't have spikes and valleys that are too long and too great. The gel works in most people. It's not a sudden miracle by any means, but over the time that the body starts getting the signal from the testosterone again, it takes a couple of months and the person's feeling better generally. A couple of weeks they'll notice symptom changes usually, especially if they're really down. Those are the primary methods that I like. I've tried the prescriptive patches, but everyone got rashes, and I stopped using them. And the buccal lozenges, which you dissolve inside your cheek, I think are mostly swallowed, and so they become oral delivery methods. And oral is the least likely that I would ever use, because oral is where we get the cardiovascular risk, the liver risk, and all the other problems, because it's it goes directly to the liver first, and all the metabolites then happen. So we burden the liver with that. So those are the methods of delivery, and I like injection or gel.
And so I see in the HIV population that I work with, because as you know, the HIV support group that I've run here in Sarasota for 20 years, we have issues oftentimes with muscle wasting.
Yes.
With individuals who have HIV. And so
30% or more actually of HIV do have hypogonadism from a variety of sources. And I don't think it's necessarily the virus that causes it, but there's so much metabolic stuff happening in a person with that much inflammation from the virus that they end up getting it. Although opportunistic infections occur and they could damage the testes. There's all kinds of things that happen. HIV is definitely a hypogonadal state.
Well, and what I see is that, you know, some of the HIV positive individuals that I work with use this once a week shot.
Yes.
And have been able to maintain their muscle mass. And so when we look at loss of muscle mass, and we look at that specifically, I know that men lose about 40% of their muscle mass as they age over time, and women do the same thing. But should we be replacing testosterone in levels that are equivalent to a 20 or 30 year old, or should we just be getting it into the normal range?
Well, 20 to 30 year olds are in the normal range. The men that have the highest testosterone levels are teenagers, and they're way super normal compared to the what's the adult normal. So after puberty, after adolescence, and the testosterone levels come back down, the way I look at it is the functional range is what actually results in the functional individual. If you need 800 to feel vibrant and function well, then you need 800. If you feel great at 395, then stay there. Personally, I
so
like
you're
my
going through the feed. So you're going for the feedback loop as opposed to the number.
Truly, it's looking at the individual rather than the number. We can't treat
so
the number
you're
only.
Actually treating people instead of treating a piece of paper. What a concept,
isn't
Dr. Harvey.
So even if somebody's down at 250 and they look like they might be in need of testosterone, I would much rather do some things like the oat straw and DHEA and fix the metabolic problem and do all these other things to try and boost them up. I mean, how many of my patients right now do I know exercise 30 minutes of aerobics 6 days a week? A very small percentage.
Uh-huh.
It's tough to convince people to do it, but that is a essential, I hate to use the word, cure for hypogonadism in some people, because it's just that that gets it going. They've even shown that doing resistance training, squats and lunges and things like that, lower body resistance training will increase testosterone levels. So add to the aerobics.
But I've also heard that people that have high testosterone levels have a tendency to more violence, more anger, more outbursts.
So that's only been shown in high testosterone levels. I'm not looking at getting somebody into to high ranges. I want them into mid to high normal if they like it that way, or mid to low normal if they like it that way. I'm just looking at getting them into a range that's functional for their body, and I don't care if it's 250 or 1,000. It's when they are optimally functioning is when we're at the right level. And it's going to be subjective and it's going to be objective. We can see metabolic changes. I can watch body composition changes on the bioimpedance analysis, the resistometer, to see how the muscle mass is doing and the fat mass. So if we see good body changes and know that cellular integrity is better and insulin resistance is better and they're not snoring anymore, we've actually won. We've got somebody functional.
So what about women getting testosterone?
Women can utilize testosterone, and I have prescribed it. I don't prescribe it often because, quite simply, women do pretty well with DHEA. I mean, I have to really go gently with DHEA because it can really convert to testosterone very easily in some women, and they'll get a mustache on a gnat's dose of DHEA. So I tend to save testosterone till we've exhausted other possibilities.
Yeah, the primary place that I recommend it to females are females that have osteoporosis that has been non-responsive to a lot of therapies.
Yes, and DHEA would be the first thing to try there. And if that doesn't work, then I think testosterone is really a valid option because it's anabolic. And what we want to do in bone osteoporosis is to actually get the bones anabolic. We want to build them up with protein.
Well, you know, I had a client and she came to me and she had a hormone replacement from an anti-aging doctor. And the hormone replacement was a cocktail. It had estrogen and testosterone and DHEA and progesterone all together in one cream. And when she was sitting there during the consultation, she pushed up the sleeve of her jacket, and I saw that she had a stripe of dark hair on her arm. And it was kind of odd because it was literally a stripe. And I went, whoa, what's that? What's going on with that? And she said, oh, well, that's where I rub my hormone cream.
Oh, my.
And so she had taken her hormone cream and rubbed it on the inside of her lower arm, and in doing so had stimulated the hair follicles enough that she actually had a dark stripe of hair. And I was like, ooh.
I would be too.
I don't think that it's really a good idea for us to be taking estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA all at the same time and rubbing it on the skin, at least especially not until the time that we get balance of these things. You know, at least use them individually until we find out how much you need.
And generally, if you put progesterone and estrogen and DHEA on board, the testosterone becomes irrelevant. The woman, you usually get a good testosterone response.
Well, I mean, it's so often that I've had women come in and they say, I have a low libido and I want to get my testosterone checked. And I said, you know, my experience in practice for 30 years is I've had women come in here who have a low libido and we test their testosterone and it's very normal. Mm-hmm. And I have women that come in here that hump like bunnies and their testosterone is in the basement. Mm-hmm. I said, libido has a lot more to do with other things besides testosterone.
It's interesting that some women do get symptomatic relief with the testosterone, but that's really subjective because studies have shown that there is absolutely no correlation. With testosterone and women's libido,
and
none.
That's what I've seen in my practice. I keep telling women that the single most important thing with libido in females is very different from the way that it is in males, because the single most important thing for libido in females is safety.
Yes.
She has to feel like she's loved and comforted and taken care of, and if there's anything that's not safe about the environment, her libido's out the window.
Exactly.
And the second thing is you got to make time. You know, if having intimate relations is just one more chore on the list, including, you know, mopping the kitchen floor and running a load of wash, then you aren't going to have any libido.
Right.
You've got to make a date and do some things to increase intimacy. That is where women's libido comes from. So where's the role of estrogen in the whole cocktail with men? Because, you know, when we see that men can convert testosterone into estrogen, and some of them convert it too much, those are the men that actually grow breasts.
Right.
Do we have to make sure that we balance both of these hormones when we're treating men?
Well, it's not necessarily a question of balancing them. It's how are we going to support the body to keep the balance? Because if you have one of the issues with using high doses, bodybuilding levels of anabolic steroids, the bodybuilders found out that lots of it converts. I mean, it's a relative ratio. You should have about 10-to-1 ratio of estrogen to testosterone in a male. I mean, testosterone to estrogen in a male. There should be 10 times more testosterone. And so that's the bottom end of the limit. And so if you're at a blood level of 2,000 because you're taking vast amounts of these steroids, you're going to have a 200 estrogen level. And so men, maximum level is going to be 50. So at 200, they're going to be developing breast tissue. And so there are ways to prevent that. And simply actually dealing with liver detox and hormone modulation is a really good way to do it. Adding cruciferous vegetables and extracts like dienylmethane or indole-3-carbinol or sulforaphane glucosinolate. These things are
They're so easy for you to say, Dr. Harvey.
Lovely broccoli extracts.
Well, I made coleslaw last night. I had coleslaw with my salmon burgers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's definitely, I've got bok choy tonight. Mm-hmm. So I try to get one of those cruciferous vegetables into my diet every single solitary day, whether it's cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, arugula, watercress, kale, Brussels sprouts. I love them all,
yes.
You know, I just love them all. But I try to make sure if I haven't had one of those cabbage families for lunch, I make sure I get one of those cabbage families for dinner, even if it's just a little bit.
Yep. It really is useful. And another thing is to keep your gut working very well, because if your gut is not metabolizing well, you don't metabolize the hormones well, and you don't excrete them well. So making sure that a good probiotic's in there, and you get a lot of fiber and lower fat, these will help metabolize the hormones more efficiently. But if estrogen becomes a problem, and actually that can be part of the source, there could be things there interfering and causing the shift away from testosterone. So we want to enhance that initially as well to try and support normal testosterone levels and lowered estrogen levels. But if we get into trouble, there are medicines that can help. But I really try to avoid them, because, and I generally don't use them because I don't need to in normal physiologic dosing.
Well, that's a lot of turf on one hormone. There are no questions about it. There's a lot to learn. It's not as easy as the TV ad, gee, do you have low T?
It's not that simple.
It's not that simple. Well, I know, Dr. Harvey, that you're going to be giving another class on this over at Sarasota Specialty Pharmacy on Tuesday, the 31st of January at 7 o'clock. So those of you listeners out there that want to learn more about testosterone, you can do so on Tuesday, January the 31st at 7 o'clock at Sarasota Specialty Pharmacy. It's a free seminar that Dr. Fred Harvey will be giving. And so, once again, Dr. Harvey, thanks very much for being here.
It is always a pleasure. Thank
you. If a bald guy takes testosterone, is he going to grow his hair back?
Look at my head. And I don't anymore. Actually, I went through andropause and recovered from it. Stress is one of the worst testicle killers in the world.
There's no question about it. And so if you want to learn more about stress and nutrients and things that you can do to increase your muscle mass or change erectile dysfunctions or work on your mood or your desire or your energy, and you want to learn more about testosterone, there's more to learn about testosterone from Dr. Fred Harvey.